Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Ken Roop. Ken, welcome. It's great to have you with me.
Well, hello, Gloria. It's good to be with you.
And since you have listened to a few of these, you have some sense of what happens here. And at the very beginning, we'd like to know where you started out in life. And I'm pretty sure you're not a native Oregonian.
You're right about that. I moved to Oregon when I was in early grade school years. So I've lived here most of my life. But I started my life in a little small country town in south central Kansas called Crystal Springs, Kansas. And I lived there. My family was there until I was in the first grade. I started first grade there, and then our family moved to Oregon. And it's been an interesting story ever since then. In our early years, we moved quite a number of times. I think first, second, third, fourth, and fifth grade were all at different schools. So
we'll get to some of that in just a moment. What was like the closest big city or town in Kansas that you might have been close to when you were born?
We were probably about 60 miles south of Wichita. Harper, Kansas was the nearest town to Little Crystal Springs, which was just a mail stop on the Santa Fe rail line.
How many siblings in your family, and where do you fit?
I'm the second of four kids, an older sister, 3 years older, a younger sister, 3 years younger. And then about 15 years after me came a younger brother.
It took a while to get that younger brother.
Yes.
Do you have any memories at all of life in Kansas?
Yeah, I do have a few. As I say, we lived in Crystal until I was about 6 years old. The railroad line ran right through the town. I remember a lot of times walking on the rails and waiting for the train to come, watching the postmaster hang up the mail bag on a post, and the train would grab it as it went by and then throw off a mail bag, things like that. Of course, today there's hardly any people that live in that little town, and there's no longer a post office. There was a filling station, a blacksmith, a meat market, little grocery, and I think all of those things are gone. It's almost a ghost town now.
I love trains, so I love your story. So did the train actually stop there, or maybe just slow down a little bit and do the pickup and the drop-off?
Yeah, I think it was just a slow down, and there was never a passenger that would get on or get off. It just kept going right on through and tooting its horn.
What kind of work was your father doing there?
In those days, my father was trying to be a farmer. We had a few dairy cattle, and he farmed some wheat, some land raising wheat. It was in the early 50s, and there were two years in a row, I think, that the crops were just horrendous. And I remember Dad saying that they got like 2 bushel to the acre 1 year. And that was one of the reasons that, the fact that we were living on a relative's rented property, and he wanted the property back, the house that we were living in, that forced us to make a move. And my dad at that time had a sister who lived in Portland, and they invited our family to move to Oregon. So I think I'd started first grade in a little two-room schoolhouse, and I had two other kids in my first grade class. And two or three months into the school year, we made the move to Portland.
So that answered perfectly my next question. What brought you to Portland? And you had family here already.
Right. And Dad found a job in Southeast Portland working at, I think it was Fowler Manufacturing, a water heater company. He worked there for the remainder of that year. And then I don't know what happened, if he was laid off or if we looked for something else. So we moved the following year to a rural Maxburg, Molalla area. And what did Dad do then? I think he worked for the Krupp Lumber Mill that year. So it was just sort of one thing to another.
Did he ever try farming again?
Well, of sorts. I think when I was in the fifth grade, we moved to the home place out in the rural Canby Needy area, where we lived the rest of my school years through college. The family lived there. We had a little 13-acre piece of property, some farmland, and there was a barn on it. Dad had three or four or five milking cows. We had a few hogs, a few chickens, and every year we'd have a huge garden. And so that was farming. He worked out up in Beaverton, so he had about a 45-minute drive to work every day, working at the Oregon Regional Primate Research Center, taking care of monkeys. They were under research. And each day, in the morning, he would do his milking chores. In the evening, he would do the chores. And so I grew up being involved in doing those kinds of chores as well. I've had my share of milking of cows.
And the Primate Center is right around the corner from where we live. So I know exactly where that is.
Yeah.
So it sounds like the farm wasn't necessarily the means of keeping the family together financially. He had
no, it wasn't large enough and lucrative enough to be a sole source of income. Dad worked out all that time.
So you moved a lot in those elementary school years. What was that like for you, making that change all the time? Was that something you looked forward to? Was it?
Well, I didn't mind it so much, but as I look back on it, I realized that I really didn't form a lot of close friendships during those times. You would have friends and acquaintances, but then you would move away and have to make new ones. So I can't think of anyone during those early years that really have maintained contact with, or at least not a lot of close contacts anyway. It wasn't until fifth grade that, as I say, we moved into the Canby Needy area and started making contacts that I still relate to some of those people today.
We are in the holiday time of the year, so I'm wondering if you have any memories of, during your growing up years, things that related to this time of the year, maybe special foods, family times, gifts that you wanted and got or didn't get, anything like that?
Well, because we had a farm, we had quite a number of fruit trees, and it isn't quite Christmas time, but like in the fall of the year, there would always be apples. My dad had bought a used cider press, and that was always an event that we did in the fall of the year, making apple cider. He would even go around in his driving to and from work and look for places that had apple orchards and see apples falling on the ground, and he would check with those folks and see if they wanted to get rid of their apples. So that was for several years, I remember. That was an event that we did.
Did you have like a special building that you did this in, or how did that work to have a cider press?
It was a press that could be moved around, and we had a couple of outbuildings, a shed that was hooked up with electricity. So we actually did it outdoors, rain or shine at times, but the theory was the rain didn't hurt the apple cider. It just gave it a little different flavors.
And did you sell that then, or?
Dad did. He had some friends in the neighborhood. He actually, we had chickens too, and he sold eggs. He sold cider. He sold some raw milk to a few neighbors, and he would take some to his fellow workers up at the Primate Center. So, he was pretty industrious in those regards.
Since there's such a long span before you got a brother, did your sisters have to help around the farm as well?
I don't housework, I think. You know, it was pretty divided labor back in those days growing up, as I recall. I don't remember the girls ever going out to do the chores, but they were involved in cooking and keeping the house clean. I don't know, maybe they have other memories of that, but I don't recall. We also at that time had a wood stove, and so I would always have to, after school, would have to go out to the woodshed and chop kindling and bring in wood to the wood box that we had in the living room.
So that was a stove to keep the house warm, but
yeah,
was it different from the one that your mother cooked on?
Yeah, that's true. It was heating for the house until I moved away to college. Then they went and got natural gas.
Isn't that how it is?
Yes.
So you went to public school the whole time, or tell me about school.
Went to, as I say, first grade in Kansas, and then moved to Portland. Second grade, a little rural one-room school in the Maxburg area, the EB grade school. Third grade, there was a call from my mom's dad for the family to move back to Kansas to help him with his business. So we moved back to Crystal Springs, Kansas in the third grade. After about a year, that no longer was lucrative and no longer materialized, we moved back to Oregon. We lived in Molalla for the fourth grade, went to elementary school there, and then fifth grade, moved over and went to 91 grade school, which is probably the best grade school in the country. Yeah. And then went on to public high school at Canby High School. And after that, went to a private college, went to Bethel College back in Newton, Kansas, North Newton, Kansas.
So you graduated from Canby High School?
Correct.
After that, how was the decision made? Did you always think or understand that college would be the next step? Was there any question about that? Were there discussions in your family? And then how did you make the decision to go where you went?
Bethel College was the nominal church college for the General Conference Mennonite Church. My sister, 3 years older, had gone to Bethel. She'd gotten a two-year degree there in secretarial or associated arts, I guess it is. I had for quite some time thought I wanted to be a teacher. And so college was always in my mind. And it just seemed almost natural for me to give Bethel priority in my thinking. So for most of my high school years, I saw that as a goal, a place I would like to attend.
And which church were you attending here in Oregon?
We went to the Calvary Mennonite Church. It was originally in Barlow when we first moved to Oregon. It was in Barlow, a little tiny suburb of Canby. And then when I was away in college, I built a new church building out of Aurora, rural Aurora. And that's where my family attended. Even after college, when Barb and I moved back to Oregon, we attended there for a couple of years before moving to Portland.
How many years were you at Bethel?
Four.
And you found out that you were correct in your thinking that you might want to be a teacher as you were going through college. Did you ever have any questions, or you were like, this is it?
I was pretty well focused on that. My coursework, I took a lot of education courses. I did get my Kansas teaching certificate after I graduated. But from there, we got married the summer after our graduation and ended up going into serving under MCC in the Teachers Abroad program. And that was to fulfill my requirement for the military service. I filed as a conscientious objector.
So you met Barb at college? Tell me a little about that.
She had transferred into Bethel, I think, her junior year. it was actually my junior year, and she'd been in and out of several different schools, and so I had lost some credits because of the transferring. So she was a junior at that time as well, even though she's a year or two older than I am. But I think the first year, I don't think we really got to know each other until our senior year, and when we started dating, and things went from one thing to another.
So was she in education as well?
No, she was going to be in social work. Bethel offered a social work major, or was it sociology or social work? I forget which one of those. She ended up being about two classes short of getting her degree. So she's lamented that for quite a number of years, having never gone back. But she was at a point of being burnt out with school and decided it just wasn't worth fighting. She actually took a couple of correspondence courses when we were overseas under MCC, thought, well, maybe she could do that. And that turned out to be a difficult task as well. So
you kind of rescued her.
I think she looked at it that way early on, but maybe looking back, thought maybe I hindered her.
And what degree did you actually end up with?
I got a BA in history and social sciences.
And what grade were you thinking you might want to teach?
High school, middle school to high school. And that was what the certificate was in. Just turned out that things went a different direction after our term of service.
So you graduated and you got married.
Yes.
And then you needed to fulfill your requirement to the government to serve. Did those happen kind of simultaneously, or was there a space in between there? Or
I had already made the decision. Both Barb and I had discussed that, and that we were interested in serving under MCC. But about the time towards the spring of my senior year, I think I got a notice from the Selective Service that I was going to be called up, and I'd already been approved as a conscientious objector. And so, but I was called to have a physical taken. I think it was even before we were married. So it must have been in June of that year that they called me in for a physical, and I guess I passed that. But I had already been approved, I think, by that time to go into MCC's service.
Getting that CO status was not a big problem for you.
I didn't have much of a problem. I talked with my pastor. This would have been in junior, senior year of high school, where I guess probably my senior year, although I'd thought about doing that for quite some time. And I had to fill out a questionnaire, and that got sent into the draft board, and get a few recommendations from people I knew from the church and the pastor, and that all went into my file. And I think it was pretty well approved. Our draft board was not notorious for creating problems for young men, as opposed to some that I heard of in Kansas, especially, that gave applicants a very difficult time.
So MCC, Mennonite Central Committee, did you know you'd be going overseas? Tell me that story.
I had long known and heard about people who served in the Congo. A close friend of the family had served in PAX 8-10 years prior. I knew him after he returned. Several families that we were familiar with were medical doctors, missionary doctors in the Congo. So that was a country that I had always heard a little bit about, and that was sort of the focus of my interest. And Barb had agreed to give that a shot. She had actually spent a year in Algeria with her family, with her parents, working in MCC. Her father was a country director in Algeria in 1963 to 65, something like that. She spent a year with them in Algeria during her high school years. So she was open to returning to service under MCC.
And what was your assignment? Now, were you with the Teachers Abroad program or?
Yes, we entered in under that program. We didn't know where we were going to go, although I think they agreed that we would go to Congo at that time. So that meant having to improve our French. And so we spent a year in Brussels, Belgium, working on our French skills. And because Belgium was originally the colonial power for Congo, there was more connection to Belgium than to France in learning French. And there was an old sort of a colonial school that people who had served in the Congo a long time were teachers in this school. And so MCC sent students into that school to get a little bit of history and language skills in order to go on down to the Congo. So we spent that year enjoyable in many ways. The language study wasn't the greatest, but we did our best. We also had a little opportunity during off days to do some traveling around Europe as well before finally going down the following August to Congo.
And you flew both to Europe and to Africa?
Yes, that's correct.
So did that leave just 2 years on your assignment then to be actually in the Congo?
Yes. Yes. We spent 2 years in Africa.
There are a million stories here, I know. But where did you eventually get assigned in the Congo? I used to work in the MCC Africa department, so I'll just throw that out there.
Right. And of course, our country director at that time was Ray Brubaker, who I assume you know well.
Very well.
And a month or two before we were to go to Africa, we were assigned a school in the northeast part of the country. A few MCCers had been there before, and this was a school that had just been opened up. It was an agricultural school in the Congo for quite a few years, even prior to independence. But it had been closed down because of rebellion and troubles in the northeast part of the country. And it had just been reopened a year or two prior to that by the Congo Protestant Relief Agency because they were looking to help Sudanese refugees. We were maybe 75 miles from the border of Sudan. And the United Nations had about three refugee camps. There was an ongoing battle in southern Sudan. And so there were many refugees in refugee camps. And the Congo Protestant Relief Agency wanted to establish a school for those students. The government agreed to allow that to happen, but they insisted that half of the student body be Congolese students and the other half could be Sudanese students. So that was a school that we were assigned to. And so we had students, some of who had not, this is basically middle school through high school. There were about 6 years of school. And some of the students, the Congolese knew French, some French. Some of the Sudanese did not know any French. They knew some English and some didn't know much of anything. So we had English and French being taught at this school. So it was an interesting, and students lived at the school. So it was furnished, you know, meals were made there for the students, and it was quite an operation.
I'm assuming that at the end of 2 years, were you given the option of extending, or how did you make a decision at that point?
It was I'm not sure anymore. I think we did have that option, but we opted out. It was somewhat traumatic for Barb during that time, some of our experiences. She didn't feel totally comfortable in the teaching assignment. And I don't know, we just felt that it was time to think about getting on with the family, and we opted to return to the States. There was another MCC couple. We had six MCC people during our second year there. at the school. So there was a turn. One of the male teachers and another couple, their term continued on, and another one re-upped. So some of the personnel did stay on at that school.
And when you came back, did you know that you'd be coming to Portland, or where did you go?
We assumed that we would come to Oregon. We ended up, you know, I was going to look for a teaching position at that point in time. Didn't have a chance really to get resumes out or know of any job openings. And it turned out that it was a pretty tight teaching market at that point in time. So a friend of the family from the church that knew my parents was the manager of a ladder manufacturing company and said I could come and start work there. And if I found something, there would be no problem. So we ended up moving to Woodburn, and we lived there for a couple of years. And I worked in this ladder manufacturing company, learning one job after another, different responsibilities there. And one thing led to another. And a couple of years later, we decided we wanted to move to Portland, get more involved with the Alberta Community Mennonite Church, where Barb's uncle was the pastor. Then a job at the Portland branch of this factory opened up, and one thing led to another, and I continued to work with this company. I'd had one teacher interview during that period, and it turned out to not be successful, and so that was the end of my teaching career.
And we're at the end of our time already as well. There are obviously so many more stories, and we know that somehow eventually you did end up at Portland Mennonite, and you've been there for...
probably 1987. I think it was the year that Ralph Lynn came to Portland that we began attending Portland Mennonite. So we had been at Peace Mennonite Church prior to that.
Well, as I said, there are just so many more stories that it's hard to dig very deep during this half hour. But thank you, Ken, so much for taking the time to share some of these amazing stories with us.
Well, thank you. It was enjoyable.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.